Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling. I'm your host, Daniel Hummer. We'll be here for the WCW World War III 1995 pay-per-view retrospective. I'm here with my co-host, my brother Doug.
What's that?
Our buddy Eric.
What up?
And of course, longtime cast member of the show, Stevie.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. We're going to get right into the nitty-gritty in a little bit here. Before we do that, I'm going to pass it to my brother Doug for plugs and other stuff.
Okay. Make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night. Mixlr.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. It can be found on all major podcast platforms, usually around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time. Tonight, they will not have a show because obviously it's Thanksgiving weekend, and I'm pretty sure that they're both still full from Turkey. So they will not be on tonight, but you catch them every other Friday, and of course on every Friday except for tonight and Wednesday and every Wednesday. All right, listen to us every Friday night here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. 6:30 p.m. Eastern time normally now. That'll be our new time, or has been our new time for the last several weeks. Next week's show will be a poll picked by our monthly fantasy wrestling winner. Now, the scores as of right now, and they obviously they'll change after SmackDown tonight. The winner might not change, but in last place, we have Stevie with 12 points. In fourth place, we have Clinton with 112. I mean, he doesn't do the show anyway. When the hell is he to get to pick the poll? In third place, we have Eric with 143 points. In second place, me with 194. And in first, we have Daniel with 245. So unless somebody gets me, unless there's like a bunch of title matches tonight, my people win some championships.
It's about over.
Yeah.
Good to know. Good.
Pretty much. So Daniel will more than likely get to pick the poll for next week, which I'm pissed. But the scores will.
Yeah, I'm
beginning of the month.
I'm not happy about that either.
Well, I don't know. I can't stop. With the perfection, it just comes out. I picked the ultimate team.
All right. Also, this Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, are we doing?
Yeah.
All right, 5 p.m. Eastern time, same channel, will be another edition of Daniel's Controlled Chaos. Daniel,
nice.
What are we doing?
We're going to be talking about the death of Bruce Lee and the controversy surrounding it. We're going to be getting a little bit into his son, Brandon Lee, as well. And the onset stuff during the Crow, and basically the family, the father and the son, and everything. We'll be touching on Bruce Lee's life a little bit, and we'll be kind of investigating and trying to get to the bottom of our own theories about it. So it'll be a good time.
Yeah, and there's a lot to get into there. Yeah, because, you know, there was always rumors going around about how he died and who he died from.
Yeah.
The more controversial part, I think, is what happened to his son.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously we'll get into both of that. I'm actually looking forward to it. It's going to be interesting. It's just going to be you and I, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Listen to mainly on Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, same channel, the NFL Hard Hits Show. It'll be Eric and Clintus this upcoming Tuesday, I believe. I'm not sure if I'll be on yet or not. I may have other plans. But they'll be reviewing week 12, previewing week 13. All right, let's get into this.
All right. World War III, gentlemen. This was WCW's kind of not their first crack at a Royal Rumble type thing, but one of the biggest examples of them trying to, you know, copy WWF success with the Royal Rumble. And World War III was an interesting idea. We'll get into the match a lot more later. But the concept of this pay-per-view is you got three rings and it's a battle royal with 60 people, right, Doug?
Yeah. And it legitimately is 60 people, okay?
And it's not like the Rumble. You don't get a title opportunity. You actually get the belt if you win this one.
Right. So it was kind of the 1992 Royal Rumble revisited.
And there was a good amount of storylines going into this. A couple big feuds, a couple small feuds. Of course, the big match is the draw, but you also got Luger and Savage on here and Sting and Flair. So there is a lot to get into here. Before we get into it, Doug, you want to hit us with some build-up and, you know, background? And
okay, so the purpose of World War III, everybody remembers. I mean, we try not to remember. We tried to drink it away after we did it. But, you know, we reviewed the Halloween Havoc 1995.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, some of us, I think, tried to drink that memory away more than others.
Yeah.
But so everybody remembers the controversy of World War III or of Halloween Havoc 95 and Hogan losing by disqualification. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, getting butt-fucked by the Yeti. So the next night on Nitro, the Giant comes out walking with the world title and nobody could figure out why. The next week on Nitro, he defends the world title against Cobra. But it's 6 seconds. Nobody could figure out why, because everybody thought Hogan was still the world champion.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of this show, which also on this show, on the same Nitro, is when Sting tried to break Ric Flair's legs with the Scorpion Deathlock.
Yeah.
When they met in the WCW Interactive match. And then Luger came out, whispered something in Sting's ear, and then Sting left with him. Basically, it was Jimmy Hart basically revealed that he had Hulk Hogan's power of attorney. And he decided to add a disqualification clause to the contract that states if Hulk Hogan were to be disqualified, he would lose the WCW title. So Jimmy Hart, that's why he whacked Randy Anderson in the back of the head with the megaphone. It would disqualify Hogan. So came out and they said, look, he, you know, the Giant's a world champion. And he, you know, and then Mean Gene Okerlund had a WCW lawyer by the name of Nick Lambros come out and say, hey, is this, you know, legal? And Nick Lambros said, look, he did have Hulk Hogan's power of attorney. However, he is not the world champion. Now, and Nick Lambros was actually a legitimate lawyer. Okay?
Yes.
So, so then he basically said that Nick Lambros basically said, you know, look, the winner of World War III, read a statement from the WCW Championship Committee, the winner of World War III is going to be crowned the new WCW World Champion. So that's how that kind of, you kind of set that up. And Hulk Hogan was kind of doing his trip to the dark side. But basically, the main storyline heading into the Battle Royal was Hogan and the Giant. But you had your secondary storylines, like Sting and Flair, and how Sting wanted to kill Flair after stabbing him in the back at Halloween Havoc. You had the Macho Man Luger storyline, which was actually compelling. Read the storyline for the WCW World Television title, with Johnny V. Badd and Diamond Dallas Page. You had the New Japan storyline where Sonny Ono, representing New Japan Pro Wrestling, he bought time from Bobby Heenan. Basically, he bought half of the WCW Pro Wrestling program so he could be on half and showcase his guys. Well, the day before World War III, WCW basically investigated it and said, Bobby Heenan does not have the right to sell you this, therefore, it's not legal.
Yeah.
So you had that. You also had the Hacksaw Jim Duggan Big Bubba storyline. There was, like, so much stuff going on. And WCW at that time, and you guys, I sent you those videos.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
WCW had six programs.
Yeah.
Nitro, Saturday Night, Pro, Worldwide, Prime, and WCW's Main Event. Now, WCW's Main Event was usually a lead-in for the pay-per-views. Other than that, they would also serve as a recap show.
Right.
Okay? And Worldwide and Prime were syndication. But you had six programs that could develop storylines. Because they could actually do that at the time. Now, the syndication programs really didn't develop the storylines that much, but, you know, the other shows did. So you had plenty to kind of look forward to. And this event, this World War III, looked good on paper. Because it's just like, oh, 60 men, three rings? Holy shit, that could be cool, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and we'll get into it later on, but it was just WCW wanted to basically just, this was their way to have monthly. They needed a pay-per-view for November. This is the concept they came up with.
So now getting into this, takes place in Virginia at the Norfolk Scope. 12,000 people in attendance, about a 043 buy rate. And business isn't exactly hot yet, but it's getting there.
Right.
They're on an upward spiral, but they still don't have the formula quite yet. Nitro has already launched. So they're getting to the dance.
Now they were coming off their biggest go home show yet. You know, a go-home show is. Right? For anybody that doesn't know what a go-home show is, it is usually the last television broadcast of a major show before the major pay-per-view. So their Nitro, which is a go-home show for World War III, your main event was Sting and Hogan for the first time ever. Okay?
Big deal.
Not only that, but you also had Scott Norton versus The Shark. Road Warrior Hawk versus Big Bubba, which, you know, back in the day was a big deal. 95 may not have been so much, but earlier than that would have been. And then you had Eddie Guerrero and Flying Brian. So they were coming off one of their biggest go-home shows up to that point because they were actually doing a good job in building guys that could possibly win World War III.
Yeah. You thought a few of these guys could do it. I mean, the big names were there, right? Like Hogan, Savage. I think Giant's name had to have been in the hat. Probably like...
Your biggest stars that could have been considered for world title. Nobody was going to say that Cobra or the Renegade were going to be the world champion. Or even, God bless him, Dave Sullivan. All right. But your biggest names, Hogan, Flair, Sting, Macho Man, Luger, I said Flair, right?
Yeah, you said Flair. All
right. Hogan.
Yeah. Sting, maybe.
Hogan, Flair, Sting.
Yeah.
All right, so Giant and Luger. Those were your top six.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and One Man Gang was basically coming in. I mean, they put him in the Dungeon of Doom because, you know, he was managed by Sullivan back in the early 90s. So there was familiarity. And plus, they also knew that he could get whoever was going to be the new world champion over.
You also had Road Warrior Hawk in there.
Yeah.
You had Arn was in there. Bagwell. I'm not going to say everybody, but Jim Duggan. You did a pretty stacked roster.
Right.
For the time.
Nasty Boys.
Yeah, the Nasty Boys.
Harlem Heat.
Yes, Brian Pillman. But there was a bunch of scrubs in there, too, because you had to have 60 people.
Well, yeah, you had to have 60 guys, and that was the thing. And this is actually why, because for the next few years, WCW would have over between 60 to 100 guys on the roster.
Yeah.
But again, six television programs.
Yeah.
And matches like this. You need bodies.
Yeah.
So it made sense. Now, by the time 1999 would come around and Vince Russo would be in charge, I mean, World War III would be gone because Russo would be like, we don't need all these fucking people. Get rid of half of them, okay? So, like, you had that. But, no, around this time, and this was a cool concept, but the issue is, and the reason why I think it only lasted 4 years is because, or they only did four of them, is because the rules changed every year. And we'll get into that later.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the opening match. Johnny B. Badd, Dallas Page for the WCW television title. This is an interesting one because with watching Halloween Havoc last month, this is a continuation of the storyline, right?
Yeah.
Almost the payoff?
Yeah.
They kept going after that. Yeah. They went the next night on Nitro.
Yeah.
They had another match. They had a rematch. And then they would wrestle again at Super Bowl. And then they were supposed to wrestle again at the Uncensored pay-per-view. Of course, this is in 96. But then Mark Mero decided, yeah, nah, I'm gone.
Right. Okay. So this feud's okay. You know, these two guys aren't.
This match was a lot better than Halloween Havoc.
I
enjoyed Halloween Havoc. I mean, it had a lot more to do with Bobby Heenan and Tony Schiavone's commentary.
I did not enjoy their match at Halloween Havoc. Though. I like this one a lot better. And it went about 13 minutes, and it was still, you know, it kept me engaged this time. I thought this was a way better bout than what they had at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
Maybe putting Diamond on the line. It started getting more personal here.
It got more personal. And here's the problem. Putting Diamond Doll on the line, you know, we've seen it before, right?
Yeah, but not usually with a baby face.
Yeah, that's the issue. I think that's kind of the issue.
Yeah.
And then Mark Mero's a baby face, and he was obviously over as a baby face because the crowd did like – I mean, I really think it was a theme song.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric, thank God you didn't have that as the intro to the show, or else I would have had to bust a move, and I probably would have blew my knee out again. trust me.
Which one?
The thing – but – like, no, Johnny B. Badd.
Oh.
Like, the thing is that, like, having her – now, again, she was kind of getting treated like dirt by Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes.
Now, they had the storyline, he won the lottery, won $13 million. It was actually her money. She bought the lottery ticket. In storyline, she bought the ticket. She scratched the numbers. She cashed the ticket in, but he laid claim to the money. Which would actually be more of the storyline going forward.
Yeah.
All right, especially the Super Brawl 6 storyline.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like, you, I 100% agree with you. As, you know, it didn't make sense, you know, the babyface winning the it didn't necessarily make sense, but in the fact that she would have been treated better by Johnny B. Badd.
Yeah, it was kind of like he was trying to save her. Stevie, what are your thoughts on this match?
Well, these two put on like a great match. The crowd got invested into it, and I think it was very interesting.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Comparing, because you did the Halloween Havoc show with us too. Comparing the two matches, which more were you more invested in, this time around or the first one?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I think this time around, which was World War III, was the match I was more invested in. Because obviously, you put the doll up, you know what I mean?
You put the doll up, and plus Max Muscle's not there.
Thank God.
No.
He was
in the back. Yeah, he was part of the 16. Well, because he was still under contract, but they had basically taken Max Muscle away from Diamond Dallas Page.
Right.
You didn't have a stupid segment. Well, the promo wasn't as bad beforehand either.
No, it wasn't.
Eric, let's get your thoughts on this one.
I like this match better than the Halloween Havoc one. And the story with Diamond Dallas was even added to the intrigue. I saw Diamond Dallas Page was the epic. It made sense for Johnny B. Badd to win.
Yeah, I agree. And DDP is kind of on the cusp of becoming something too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, still maybe a year away, but...
Yeah, I mean, but still, I mean, he was that guy. He was a mid-card heel.
Yeah.
And, like, here, this was starting to show, like, oh my God, you know, he really is nothing without the Diamond Doll.
Yeah. So, yeah, that match, how many stars will we give it we do 10 now, right? What's your ranking out of 10, Stevie? 1 out of 10 for this match.
1 out of 10?
Yeah.
I'm probably going to have to give it maybe a 6.
Okay. Dougie?
I give it a 7.
Eric?
I'll give it a 6.5.
Right. I'm gonna go around 6 myself. This was better than I expected, but still, I mean, these two guys aren't exactly technicians. They're not bad in the ring,
by
any stretch of the means, but for what they did in 12 minutes, it wasn't bad. Moving on to a match that was actually a lot better than I thought it would be. Big Bubba Rogers and Jim Duggan in the Tate Fist match. These two big guys beat the hell out of each other, huh, Doug?
They did. And here's the story. For anybody that watched, like, any of the videos that I sent, right? I think it was actually in the pro montage. They showed Duggan being shown his family heritage in Ireland. Coming from a long line. Not even a long line. It was his grandmother and grandfather. They were Tate Fist champions. So, and he had the problem with Big Bubba and VK Wall Street, by the way. And it stemmed from Bubba and Duggan had a match on an episode of Nitro in September. Bubba cheated the win. So Bubba was then wrestling Dave Sullivan the next week. And Dave Sullivan had his mascot, Ralph the Rabbit. Bubba was apparently allergic to rabbits. So Hacksaw Jim Duggan came down to ringside and put Ralph in the ring. Bubba started to sneeze, so he ran out of the ring and got counted out. Now, enter VK Wall Street. So VK Wall Street and Big Bubba were kind of teaming up on Duggan. Every time the two of them would, you know, face one another, Duggan would face one of them, the other one would interfere. As in this match, right? Wall Street interfered, got whacked with the 2x4, but then, you know, obviously Bubba came in, crack him with the chain. But yeah, this match should not have been good at all. But guess what? These two guys have known each other since before even the WWF days.
Yeah.
These two have known each other since 1987.
Good job.
UF, yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are in 1995. It's, you know, 8 years later.
And yeah, the guys are both probably past their prime. But what they were able to do here was enjoyable.
They wanted a brawl. They got a brawl. Both these guys can really lay in the taters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this match was a hell of a lot better than it probably should have been.
Yeah.
It was entertaining.
Well, the tape fist is probably the perfect gimmick for these two.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Because they both like to punch.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. It's basically if you get hit with the tape face, you're pretty much knocked out.
Yeah. I wanted to get your opinions on this match. What did you think?
I thought it was pretty solid. The way it turned out, I'm sure many people would dislike the match, though.
Because it might not be their cup of tea, but guess what? I mean, WCW needed a feud. You can't really just throw matches together. I mean, they do throw matches together every once in a while, but you need to have some kind of build up on this shit.
Yeah, it didn't need to be.
Pretty much these guys worked together before in the WWF.
Yeah, yeah. And even before that, in their UWF days. I mean, they know each other. They're friends.
Right.
Now, what was Big Bubba Rogers' gimmick? Like, how is that different from Big Boss Man? Just a big, tough guy?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's the one thing I was kind of getting lost with. Eric, what were your thoughts on this one?
Did we lose him?
No, he probably muted himself. Eric?
All right.
Oh, yeah.
You.
I'm here.
What were your thoughts on that match?
I thought it was a solid match. I thought both guys did good work in the ring, told a good story. So I liked it.
Doug, you said yesterday when we were watching it that you think Duggan was probably at his peak here. Not at his peak, but he didn't have much left to do. But Bubba still had a little more mileage in his career left. Get into that a little bit.
Okay. So I'm basically what I meant by that was that, like, Bubba, you know, Bubba was a heel. And they were still trying, because he had just come off that, you know, a year, you know, 1994, he was known as the Boss, which, you know, WWF was trying to sue over because it was so close to being the Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
But he became the Guardian Angel, which was stupid. So then they took him back to his roots as being Big Bubba. And he had some success. And he still had a little bit because, again, he's a big, tough heel. And, you know, they would put him in the Dungeon of Doom later on, which that gave him more mileage because they basically dressed him up as a biker.
Yeah.
And it worked. Yeah. Duggan, the problem with Duggan is that there's only so much you can do. And the whole American hero thing really wasn't getting over that much anymore.
Yeah. And they already had Hogan, too.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of talking bad about his heel run last week, but a lot of people would say that the Boss Man kind of heel run in WWF rejuvenated him too, you know, when he came back.
Yeah, I mean, that's also what I mean by him having more mileage.
Almost up until he died, he always at least had work.
Yeah, I mean, he was... I mean, I don't know. I mean, he was still doing – that's when he started doing, like, conventions and stuff when he – you know, before he died.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, he still had more – and again, I love Duggan. But, again, here it was just the gimmick was just getting a little too
– Yeah. When he did the Canadian Slater, it wasn't bad.
It was so stupid, but it was actually funny.
Yeah.
You're going to be a turncoat to America. Okay, which country am I going to, you know, go to? Oh, you're going to be a Canadian supporter.
I have a question.
Glens Falls, New York, which is about 50 miles from Canada. What in the hell?
So, how many stars would you give this out of 10, Doug?
I liked it. I'm giving it a 6.
How about you, Eric?
6.5.
Stevie?
I'll have to give it a 6.
I'm going to go 7 this one. I enjoyed it, and the die comedy throughout the match was good.
Yeah.
Were you going to say
something?
I have
a question.
Okay.
Sure.
What do you got?
Was Duggan ever a heel?
Yes. When he did the can't. All right, so he was a heel back in the old Mid-South days.
Okay.
And then became a heel when he was part of the Team Canada thing in
WWE. I can't picture him as a heel.
Trust me, it was hard, I know.
Thank you, Doug.
So moving on from that match, we're going to get into the women. And excuse me for my pronunciations, because I'm not going to get this all right, but I will try. The only one I know is Bull Nakano. Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto with, of course, the legendary Sonny Ono, good friend of Eric Bischoff. They end up defeating Mayumi Ozaki and Cutie Suzuki.
Cutie Suzuki. Didn't she do something for AEW?
Cutie Suzuki? No, she didn't.
Okay.
But
the name sounded familiar.
Eric, I'm going to start with you on this one. What did you think of this match? You know, it's kind of a mix of styles. A little build-up, but not too much.
Well, the build-up was Sonny Ono and him being involved now.
Yeah. What do you think?
I thought this was a solid women's match. I mean, WCW back in the day didn't really show many women's matches. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Cared less about them.
Huh?
They could have cared less about the women's wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was a solid match to show fans about women's wrestling, especially overseas, Japan and Mexico. And was it just Japan? It was a nice mixture of international wrestling brought to the state. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much, and the ending was there were some unique styles that we kind of see today. So I liked it. I saw all four women put on a good show. I think today it would go over really well.
Yeah, especially at AEW.
Yeah.
Stevie, let's touch on now. What did you think?
Well, I think the action was intense. I mean, you had a lot of unique maneuvers. So I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
And touching on your point, which is kind of even correlates today, right, Doug? Because you got these Japanese women wrestlers are some of the most aggressive, intense people on earth.
Yeah,
in the ring, especially like today with the season, Asuka's, and even like Io Shirai, like they beat the hell out of you, and they're great performers. Doug, what did you think of this one?
I mean, I thought it was a good match. I mean, I've always liked Bull Nakano. Bull Nakano, Akira Hokuto is her name, or Akira Hokuto. I always thought she was good. And the two baby faces I thought were pretty decent, too.
Yeah.
It was a hard-hitting Japanese match, this time with women.
I mean, it's obviously filler, but it's not bad filler.
No, and again,
no.
The storyline behind this is it was Sonny Ono was trying to take over WCW.
Uh-huh.
And basically, Bobby Heenan was a Japanese turncoat.
And that'll play out in Starrcade later that year.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, if we have the opportunity,
yeah,
to probably do Starrcade, since we're kind of going in order here.
Yes.
I mean, we're doing it accidentally, but...
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I do have to bring this up because I forgot to bring it up. Yesterday was the 25th anniversary of the show.
Right.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why we're doing it.
Yeah.
That's right in the description.
This is actually, like... this is actually like the first time I ever got like something like on time. Because usually we do like, even if it's an anniversary show, we do it like a week early.
Yeah.
This time, like, we actually like almost nailed it perfect.
I know, right?
You got a lot of pay per views.
Good job, Doug.
Yeah, good job, Doug.
Uh huh.
All right. How many stars would you give this, Stevie?
I would have to say maybe a 6.
Okay. Eric?
I give it an 8.
Meltzer wannabe. I give it a 6.5.
I'd probably go 6 again. This was good, but I really don't have much critique on it because I thought all these ladies showed out, but I just wasn't as invested as much as the rest.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Now, moving on, and this has to do with Sonny Ono, too, but a lot better of a match in my eyes. Kensuke Sasaki.
Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah. Not Kenzo Suzuki, right?
Correct.
No.
By the way, Akira Hoto's husband.
Yeah. Oh, so there's family ties.
Yes.
All right. This guy's a badass. He beats Chris Benoit. 10-minute match, U.S. title, Doug, go. All
right. He wins the title from Sting 10 days earlier in WCW's Tour of Japan. Because that basically, that set off the whole thing almost of, again, it was a Bobby Heenan dealing. And Sonny Ono figured, well, I manage the United States champion. I have leverage. This match took place because on November the 13th, which they actually incorrectly list that as the date that Sting lost the title to Suzuki, or Sasaki. Hey, I mean, doing it. To Sasaki. But, and that could have, it could have very well happened because they were both on that same Nitro.
Yeah.
The problem is that Nitro was not in Japan. So... the only issue with that piece of information.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But on November 13th, 1995, on that episode of Nitro, Chris Benoit actually beat Sasaki. And therefore, logical booking states the last guy to beat you before you win the title gets the next title shot. What a concept, right?
Yeah.
And now... yeah. Is also a member of the Horsemen. But this match, it was a great technical match, but also it was stiff.
Yeah, physical.
Stiff, physical, and Sasaki, who, by the way, wrestled in WCW back just a couple years before. He was there in 92 and 93. This is a different Sasaki.
He was just... and it said Japanese style again, hard-hitting, strong style, right? But it always felt to me like Chris Benoit was always more comfortable with guys like this. Aggressive.
Definitely.
Tough, beat the hell out of you. He was good against, like, brawlers.
Yeah.
And he could get a good, nice technical match out of a brawler. And Sasaki was technical, too, but just the way – it's a different type of brawl. The way they're beating the hell
there's
out of
there's three guys that aren't brawlers that Benoit could get a really good match on. Guerrero, Malenko, Jericho.
Yes.
I mean, you could kind of throw Scorpio in there, too.
Yeah, Mysterio and guys.
Right. But, like, those three being, like, the top.
Yes.
But his matches with Sasaki, yeah. His matches with Sullivan, which Sullivan was a brawler, but also Sullivan didn't sell.
Right.
Sullivan couldn't even sell anybody a used car.
No.
All right. So
I don't know how he sold anybody on the
Dungeon of Doom. Bischoff was just like, do whatever the fuck you want.
You're right, though. I mean, even to a lesser extent, like his stuff with JBL, they had good matches.
Right.
Like a bigger brawler type.
And also, too, to your point, though, on that, I think Benoit and Sasaki were friends.
Were they?
Because they had the Japanese ties, because Benoit spent a lot of time in Japan. So they were buddies. And to your point, you know, you say JBL and Benoit were friends. So it's much easier. And we can even go back to Bubba and Duggan. They're friends. So obviously they're going to give each other the best they got.
Yeah.
When you are working with your friend, even if it's a contrast in styles, you want to make it work because you want to make your friend look good. Unless you're secretly sleeping with his wife and then you really don't care. I don't know.
I don't know. What him and Mrs. Sasaki were doing.
No, I'm not trying to make any. I'm just stating a point. Probably not a very good point, but no, this match was. I really liked it. I didn't think I was actually. Because I actually, honest to God, usually when I watch this pay-per-view in the past, I'm usually out like a light before this match comes on.
Really?
Yeah. Yesterday was only the second or third time that I actually got to intently watch this match. And you saw the way it ended, right?
Yeah.
With the clothesline. Yeah. And that was a stiff fucking clothesline.
Believable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sasaki's not a slouch. I mean, you're talking about a former IWGP world champion.
Yeah.
Former Triple Crown world champion.
Exactly.
Yep.
East Japan. So this match could arguably main event in Japan.
Right.
But for an undercard bout here, and you got a Chris Benoit who was getting towards being Chris, like the Chris Benoit we know.
Right.
Like, and he, I mean, he's always been consistently good, but this is when the notch, you know, around the time of the Horseman, this is when he really started becoming.
And this is his second run in WCW. His first run in WCW didn't end well. I mean, well, I don't know if I would say it didn't end. I mean, he was basically he was brought in as the jobber tag team partner of Bobby Eaton. Yeah.
So, but him in a big kind of thing like this, it was good. Benoit lost; he didn't need to win, but the match was good and it served its purpose.
Right, and also too, it still gives the credibility to New Japan Pro Wrestling and to Sonny Ono that hey, look, you know, one of my guys still has your title.
Sonny Ono, I mean, doesn't get a lot of credit as one of the best managers, but served his purpose. I mean, it's easy to call him a discount Mr. Fuji, but for what he did here, you know, he wasn't bad.
Right, and I just love how Tony Schiavone trying to ask Sonny Ono, do you want your money back from the brain?
Steve, what did you think of this one?
I thought it was a good match, but it suffers for two reasons. Firstly, both men are new to the crowd, and this match had no heat, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It was very they didn't get any pops. He's right.
They're both heels.
No.
I mean, because right now, here's the reason why. They're both heels. One, Benoit's a horseman. And two, Kensuke Sasaki is part of this group that's trying to take over WCW.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to like him.
No, not really. And and there was no heat to this match. But again, they used an old school tactic to book this match. They had a match on Nitro before Sasaki was the champion. Benoit wins. Therefore, Sasaki wins the title. Who's the first guy he's getting defended against? The guy that beat him last. It's an old school tactic. It, I mean, it might not work today or whatever.
It
right?
does work.
But it makes sense.
Yeah. Eric, what'd you think?
I thought it was my favorite match on the card, so I really liked it. I thought both guys performed well. I mean, any Chris Benoit match is close to a 5-star match. It was that good in the ring. So I liked it.
Cool. How many stars would you give it?
I give it 8.5.
Doug? I would give it a 9. Yeah, because I really didn't. This match to me was underrated.
It was. Stevie?
I got to go with an 8.
Yeah, and I got to go with an 8 too, just because Stevie does, he puts up a great point about the crowd participation.
Right.
It can really take you in or out of a match, and I get that it's two heels, and as wrestling fans, we can watch and say, oh, this is really good, but it's hard to get invested when no one else is.
There are certain heels that could pull it off. Like when Triple H and Kurt Angle went at it, they were both heels.
Yeah.
I mean, it was different there because they had really good chemistry.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot more of a story in that too, with Steph and everything.
It was Stephanie and the McMahon family, and it worked.
Yeah, but it still got cut kind of short.
Yeah. I mean, here in this match, it worked. This match worked because both these guys were friends.
Yeah, they could wrestle
well. Corona? Nah, I don't think so.
Because we could do this in separate rooms. Can everyone give their ratings?
Yeah.
Yep.
So let's move on. We're getting closer to the Battle Royal, but this is kind of the big three. Well, I guess it's more of a big two because it doesn't last long. But you got.
But it had to build.
It had to build, and you got Luger and Savage. Now, Savage is going into this with a hurt arm. A broken arm, apparently. But
well, they're saying broken. Now, he had ligament damage in the arm.
So he was hurt.
Yes.
Eric, your first thoughts on this match and the story and everything that went into it.
The match was okay. I mean, the story in the ring was better than the actual match. Does that make sense? I mean, the story with how they hate each other and Luger turning on turning heel. So yeah, and then him focusing on the arm. I think Savage left the was on leave after this, right?
No, he couldn't.
He went on a leave. Oh.
No.
Okay. I heard from the Bischoff podcast. So I was listening to some of that when they were talking about this pay-per-view. Maybe I misheard it.
Well, they wanted him to take time off because they wanted him to heal the arm. The problem is they were they wanted him to take time off, and yet they were still using him in storylines.
Yeah. So it was hard for him to take time off.
Stevie, what did you think of this match?
It's basically hard. It's hard to work out how WCW managed to take a match between two big names and make it so meaningless. I mean, they managed it at Halloween Havoc, and they managed it here too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. This is something that could main event anywhere in the country.
Right.
At this. And with the proper build.
They had several matches after this. They wrestled each other the next week on Nitro. Not the next night, obviously, but the next week.
But isn't that the problem with WCW, though? And that's kind of what Stevie's saying, too, that they do things like this to where you have a big money program to build to. Why are you doing stuff like this and giving it out?
Right.
I can understand the lot. I can understand the point.
They did it their whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, Luger winning the title on Nitro, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. And Luger and Savage, again, this is one of those things where they could have done it like what Johnny B. Badd and Diamond Dallas Page did. One match on a pay-per-view, then the next match on a pay-per-view. Maybe the return match on Nitro or something like that, but, you know, that ending controversy, but they still continue the build. And you save it for the pay-per-view. Luger and Savage did not work another pay-per-view match against each other technically until 1998 was their next, like, singles match against each other on paper.
Right.
Because they used the big matches for Nitro. Which, again, they're trying to win a... They're trying to win a ratings war. And so it's understandable why they would do this. But you had Savage, who had a legit injury. And the fact, and going back to Eric's point, when they're saying, Randy, you got to take some time off. You got to heal the arm.
And Randy's probably like, now why are you giving me the world title tonight?
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But they kept the feud going because if you notice that in the World War III Battle Royal, Savage kept going after Luger.
And I'm going to ask you this question, Doug.
Right.
Was this one of the best Lex Lugers? A heel Lex Luger kind of in his element, doing what he likes to do. Not the All-American, not the guy that broke away from the Horsemen.
When he was a heel. Now, I like babyface Lex Luger in WCW when he had WCW on his back.
Yeah.
But here he was definitely at his best. But he was also kind of a tweener here, too.
Yeah.
Because he was still teaming with Sting, because Sting still felt, you know, I've known this guy since 1986, 1987, whatever the fuck it may be. This guy's been one of my best friends.
Yeah.
Gotta trust him.
And I think their kind of relationship and their dichotomy was some of the best stuff WCW had going on around this time.
Right.
Because I wasn't interested in the Hogan stuff as much.
This stuff was interesting, and again, it has to do with the fact that they are real-life friends.
Yeah.
How they still were real-life friends after 1998 when Don Luger and caused a divorce, I don't know. Like, and I've mentioned the story several times, I believe, on this show, where Sting, you know, cheated on his wife back in 1998. And when he admitted it to his wife, he also admitted to his wife that Rick Steiner and Lex Luger, respectively, were cheating on their wives. And Sting's wife was friends with their wives. So she called them and said, hey, just so you know, your husbands are putting their peckers in other places. So it caused Sting's confession caused three divorces.
All right. I mean, I don't know if we can really give this match stars because it was so short, but how many stars would you give it, Doug?
Build up alone would give it a 5.
Okay. Steve?
I'd give it probably a 5.
Eric?
I'll go with 5, too.
I'll say 5.
I'll go halfway.
For what it was, decent. Now, moving on to what my opinion, the best match of the card. I rewatched this again this morning, and it was phenomenal. Sting and Ric Flair. Doug, I'm going to tap to you first for this one. I just said that the Luger Sting thing was one of the, but tell me this isn't one of the best storylines in WCW. In history, maybe.
In history, definitely. Here it was, because Sting took the kids very seriously.
Yeah.
Because he was a role model to the children.
Yeah, he was a true baby face.
He was a true baby face, and he didn't, like it was, you could tell how genuine it was. Not like that jackass that used to be his tag team partner that, you know, dependent on all his little warriors. But yet, you know, when he had to do meetings with Make-A-Wish kids, he would say, fuck that. I don't have time. All right. Another story for another time. Cause that bothers me, but Sting was very genuine. And the fact that Ric Flair brought little kids into the ring and used those little kids to convince Sting, please be my partner for Halloween Havoc. I need you. And the kids convinced him, oh, Sting, you know, he's telling the truth. He's genuine. He's telling the truth. And then Flair does what he does.
Yeah, like always.
And Sting, he's hot. He's fuming. And they had the match on Nitro, and Sting refuses to let go of the Scorpion Deathlock. And it took Luger whispering in his ear, don't kill him, he's fucking 100. But this was, it worked because of the genuine compassion that Sting has for the kids.
Well, and the genuine chemistry between the two guys.
Exactly.
You put a heel Flair and a babyface Sting and you got money. Is WCW.
Yeah.
So this was amazing. Stevie, what were your thoughts?
I mean, you put these two in the ring and they like clicked because they worked previously before and they were pretty much on the top of their game when they wrestled each other.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Flair was still Flair.
Yeah.
Like, he was still putting on great matches around this time.
Right.
He didn't start peaking until, like, 99,
98. Yeah, he pretty much.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Stevie.
You know, Flair would chop him, but Sting no-sold them all. He didn't sell it. And Flair would chop him, you know what I mean?
How great, though, were Flair's facial reactions? Every time he would chop Sting, he'd turn around, do a strut. Sting just be standing there going like this afterwards. Flair would turn around and be like, oh, shit.
Yeah. It's just such a fun match, too.
Yeah.
It's so fun to watch. It's just, you know, how much these guys both care about putting on a show.
Right.
Right.
The funny thing is that they're going on right before the Battle Royal.
Yeah, and it really makes you question. I mean, Bischoff knew what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, they succeeded on a lot of fronts. But it makes you think, like, these are the two guys that you need in the main event. Why have a Hogan that was not connecting at this time whatsoever with fans?
Right.
Macho Man is still Macho Man. So I have nothing bad to say about Macho Man, and I still believe in his ability to draw money. But like these two, like the storyline here was better than anything Hogan was doing with the Dome.
Right.
So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And they weren't even, like, Flair was not connected to the Dungeon of Doom thing. Flair was basically doing a secondary storyline.
Yeah.
Sting was connected because Sting had a relationship with Hogan and Savage and Luger.
Yeah.
But interjecting Flair into this thing, which obviously it's main event, it's WCW, it's Norfolk, which is Horseman Country.
So
I mean, I agree with you. It could have come down to Luger to Flair and Sting, which, by the way, a little bit of trivia here, this was the only World War III where both these guys were in the Battle Royal.
Yeah,
because Flair was going to be in the 91, but he broke his ankle right before.
And what doesn't make sense is, why do you bring Hogan in, rush the thing with Flair, and then do the big build-up for the Dungeon of Doom? That should be the other way around.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Eric, what were your thoughts on this one?
I thought this was a style match. These two always put on a good rivalry. And I would give it a solid 8.
Yeah.
Was it their best match ever? But probably not, but it was still a good match.
Yeah, that's also hard to say, though, because they've had at least 30.
Yeah.
These guys have been wrestling so many times, and at least 5 of them have been classics.
All right, the worst match they had against one another was the match they had in TNA, but that's because Flair was
73?
Yeah.
Flair was 63, and Sting was 52.
I mean, in the match, the last night of Nitro match.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I talked about that personally.
Yeah. What do you think the best was?
Their best?
Yeah.
There's a lot of sentimental attachment to the Great American Bash 91 because that's when Sting won the title.
Yeah.
I personally think their best match was probably a match on WCW Saturday night in August of 93. I mean, it was a no contest, but still, it was 40 minutes of them beating the shit out of each other.
I think what sold on this is just the build-up, right? Yeah. Not only the kids thing, but everything with Havoc, him turning on them. This was awesome. How many stars, Steve?
Well, I'm probably going to have to give it a 6.
Okay. Dougie?
I got to give it a 9.
Yeah, I'm going 9, too. This is not quite a classic, but one to check out from their catalog together.
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
All right, gentlemen, let's get into the creme de la creme, the main event. You know, the dessert after the meal. The 60-man World War III match for the WCW World Heavyweight title. Here are your competitors. Scott Armstrong, Steve Armstrong, Arn Anderson, Johnny B. Babb, Marcus Bagwell, Chris Benoit, Big Train Bart, Bunkhouse Buck, Cobra, Disco Inferno, Jim Duggan, Bobby Eaton, Ric Flair, The Giant, Eddie Guerrero, Hulk Hogan, Mr. JL, Chris Kanyon. Doug, was Chris Kanyon going by Chris Kanyon at this time? Or did he
Yeah, he was actually, he was a few weeks off, a few weeks away from being part of this tag team called Men at Work, which is a construction worker gimmick with Mark Starr. Oh, it was awful. Like, it was basically, it was a ripoff of a movie starring Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen, except for they were garbage men.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to parody Duke the Dumpster Drossy, so Bischoff made them construction workers.
Before I look at these guys, Chris Kanyon, great wrestler.
Yeah.
Why did he never make it?
Never with a gimmick. It, well, with Mortis. And then when he got to WWE... the fuck do we want to do with this guy? I mean, it's not, you know, it's not right, but unfortunately it's
the way it is.
Yeah.
Ryan Nobbs, Kurosawa, Lex Luger, Joey Maggs,
Meng.
Don't kill me, please. Hugh Morris, Max Muscles, Scott Norton, One Man Gang, Paul Orndorff, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, Brian Pillman, Sergeant Craig Pittman, Lord Steven Regal, Scotty Riggs, Road Warrior Hawk, Big Bubba Rogers, Jerry Sags, Ricky Santana, Sasaki, Shark, Fidel Sierra, Dick Slater, Mark Starr, Stevie Ray, Sting, Dave Sullivan, The Taskmaster, Super Assassin number 1 and 2, Booker T, Squire Dave Taylor making his debut, right, Doug?
Yes.
Bobby Walker, VK Wall Street, Pez Waitley, Mike Winter, Alex Wright, James Earl Wright, The Yeti, and The Zodiac.
Right.
One of the greatest villains in history.
And also, obviously, One Man Gang. And
Randy Savage. I thought that was great. So explanatory. Doug, was The Zodiac the best gimmick that Brutus the Barber Beefcake ever had?
No, I'm going to say it was still the barber.
Why didn't The Zodiac connect?
Because Bischoff didn't want it to.
It wouldn't have anyway.
No. Not with that character.
All right, we got a big convoluted mess here, but it is kind of exciting and intense. Steve, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of World War
III? Three announced teams.
Well, to take it in, I mean, this match was an absolute mess to follow. You had three commentary teams to a three-way split screen, which means viewers at home, while technically now being able to see everything, cannot actually see the thing. I thought it was pretty much not interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. I thought it was sort of interesting, but I agree with you. There was so much going on; it's really hard to focus.
Right, yeah. And it probably might have been better in person, but the small viewing windows, in addition of the intentionally of brawls that happened outside of one of the rings, really devalued this. You know what I mean? It was pretty much devalued.
I agree.
I think. Maybe a better idea was if they had two guys in each ring and then one person comes out to each ring at a time. Because you really didn't get to focus on any wrestling.
No.
I mean,
In the
Royal Rumble, at least you start out with two people and then it gradually gets bigger. So you do get to see some wrestling. and some moves. And I know it's that's not really technical wrestling, is not what these matches are about, but you still get to see some of that. This, all you can really see are hands flying.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Another thing you have to remember, too, is that, like, each camera is supposed to be focused on a ring, right? At one point, two cameras were focused on one ring. You had one camera pointed towards Hogan's ass and the other camera pointed towards Hogan's crotch.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, that just shows, and I have no doubt that Hogan's basically going to keep the camera on me, brother. Fucking bald.
Well, it's hard to see the wrestlers in the ring because it was like too much crowded. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which 20-man battle royals are crowded to begin with. But when you have three of them going on at the same fucking time.
You're right.
All right, Doug, which commentary team looks the best?
I am not going to put over Chris Cruz ever, unless it's over a cliff. Obviously, it was Tony and Bobby. I mean, Dusty and Bischoff were kind of... And here's the funny thing. When you get down to 10 men, you have to go to another ring. Which, of course, when you get down to 10 men, you have to go to ring number one. Unless ring number one gets built, then they have to go to ring number two, or get down to 10 men, then they have to go down to ring number two, which made no fucking sense. It's like, all right, when you get down to 10 men, go to ring one. Well, what if the men in ring one get down to 10 men? What do they have to... That's why, I think you could almost see referees go up and say, now, guys, remember, everybody has to come in here. So do not start tossing people right away. Like they actually had to choreograph this thing. And they had to micromanage this fucking thing. And it was too much of a cluster to do that.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, I like these pay-per-views because they're unique and they're interesting. And it was a cool concept on paper. The problem is, it didn't work, and then the finish was even worse.
Yeah, I think nice, solid babyface Savage win finish could have saved it.
Yeah,
if they would have went that route, and maybe even the whole one man gang thing, fine. Have them eliminate one man gang, but just have them win the title clean, and give the audience a good story to go home with, and maybe this match is saved. But the finish totally fucking ruins it. Before we get into that.
Right.
Eric, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was a clusterfuck. I mean, but I can understand because it was the first one. But I didn't like the three announced teams because it was hard to follow, at least for me, it was. You didn't know who was eliminated. You didn't know who was eliminated until, like, the last 10. And then... Yeah, you didn't see every elimination. Like, Royal Rumble, at least you see eliminations. You didn't see...
Well, yeah, because he'll go back and they'll replay.
Exactly. So you don't know who was eliminated. You don't know unless it's a big name. Like, when Ric Flair and Arn Anderson got eliminated, they said, no more horsemen. But other than that, it was an all right concept. I liked the concept, but it was clusterfuck for the first one.
I agree. It was.
Especially the ending.
Doug, what are your thoughts?
Okay.
They have a lot of them.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yep. All
right.
Been waiting for this one.
Great concept.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Well, great concept on paper. The problem is the execution. You have three different announce teams, and they have to go to each announce team because each announce team has to have equal time, right? And you have so many guys in there. Like, there were so many eliminations that weren't even called. Dave Sullivan gets thrown over the top rope. Nobody calls it. Wall Street, who was involved in one of the angles earlier in the show with Duggan and Bubba, he gets eliminated. I don't think I saw him get eliminated. I will say that one of the funniest moments was when Michael Buffer was standing, I think it was in ring one, and was doing the introduction, and William Regal is trying to walk around, but he's got Super Assassin whatever on one side. The Super Assassin was the Barbarian. The Super Assassins were the Barbarian and the Warlord, by the way. All right, so he's trying to get around the Barbarian. He can't move. So then he starts walking around, and he's trying to get around Big Train Bart, you know, Black Bart, and he can't move. So he's got this look on his face like, I'm trying to move around, and these big fuckers can get out of my way. So he's just got that regular Regal stare. It's looking like he's got that look, that bug-eyed look in his eyes like he just saw Oprah Winfrey naked. And it's I thought that was fucking hilarious. And then Buffer's doing the ring introduction. Randy Anderson, the referee, is holding up the belt, and he's looking at Michael Buffer like, hurry the fuck up. This thing is heavy, and I need to get the fuck out of the ring. So do your goddamn line up. But the whole thing, and again, there were parts of this thing that I liked. Like Luger and Savage going after each other all the time. You know, and Luger spending a lot of time outside of the ring. And the interactions, like, you know, Regal getting Regal getting the pit stop.
Well, the horseman stuff was good.
It was cool. You know, Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, kind of getting the chance to shine here.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, he's actually, you know, you noticed the stretcher spot with Scott Armstrong?
Yeah.
It was actually after an Orndorff pile driver.
Was it?
Yeah. They come over the top rope. Scotty didn't take the pile driver well. And so then Joey Maggs getting hurt. He got thrown out of the ring, but he was trapped in Pitbull Pittman's code red, which nobody called by the fucking way. He's sitting there, he's trapped in the code red. Then Pittman realizes, oh yeah, in order for him to get eliminated, he's got to go over the top rope. Throws him over the top, and Joey Maggs is sitting there for 5 minutes holding his arm. And, you know, it's just like, why isn't he getting up? You know, he could get up, he's holding his arm. He's waiting for a stretcher job. So, but, again, some of the parts were cool. The ending just sucked. And it's because of Hogan and his goddamn ego. Not wanting Seth. Here's the thing. If Sting would have won it, Hogan probably would have let him have the moment. I mean, it's Starrcade 97. It didn't happen that way. But still, this is before. I mean, Hogan was selfish here, but
it just seems like throughout his whole career, he's tried to derail Savage in some aspect.
That is pretty much it. Savage has realized it.
Yeah, later on. And honestly, a lot of people
didn't even realize it. Like, he's like, you're a friend of mine, Hulk Hogan. And it's just like, if he's such a fucking friend of yours, why the fuck is he doing this? He does this to you all the time.
Yeah.
All the time they've spent together, Randy Savage has never gone over Hulk Hogan clean.
Never.
Randy Savage has never pinned Hulk Hogan.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, it is bullshit. And Savage was always just as popular. Well, not just as popular, but he was right there.
He was right there, and he had cool gimmicks, you know, like Hogan did. The bandana, the sunglasses.
And he was a cool heel, even. Yeah. He was the Macho King with Sherry.
Exactly. The figures were cool and all that shit.
And it's just NWO Savage was a badass, too, with the bandana.
Exactly. And Hogan couldn't handle it. And the thing is, they're putting the title on him, and Hogan can't handle it. So it's got to be all about Hogan. That self-absorbed, egomaniacal piece of garbage.
Let me ask you something, Eric. Randy Savage is the one that turns heel and starts the NWO, no Hogan. Did they become nearly as successful?
That is a good question. I think so, because I think Randy Savage is just as over as Hogan was. It's not even more over. I mean, look at people still love Savage to this day.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to this, and I think what bothers me most is that they didn't do it in an entertaining way either. This just ruined everything. Like, it wasn't exciting. The fans were starting to leave while they were bitching about it.
Right.
Like, there was no entertainment value to this. It was just Hogan looking like a spoiled brat.
Hogan went to the fans and said, "Did I go? Did I get pulled under the bottom rope?"
Yeah.
The fans started chanting, "No." As in, "No, you didn't get pulled under the bottom rope."
Yeah.
No. No. Booing Hogan.
Yeah. Well, at this time, you could even say Randy Savage was more over. People were tired of Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Right. He was starting to get booed. He was getting seen.
Yeah. Go ahead, Stevie.
Well, I got a question. Would the NWO be successful if Hogan wasn't their leader, like if it was somebody else? Still successful.
And to that point, and I kind of asked Eric that with the Savage thing. If you had Savage or even their original idea, Sting.
If Sting was the leader, would it be successful instead of Hogan?
I don't know if Sting has the heel character in him, but if he could have done it, then yes.
Thing is, they tried to turn him heel in '99, and they couldn't do it.
No, it didn't work.
It didn't work. I mean, he's basically out there, and the turning point. This is when you realize, okay, this fucker can't be a heel. When he attacked the Filthy Animals, the babyface group, and he's getting cheered.
Yeah. I don't know if it would have worked as much, and I don't think he could have came out of his shell and been the cool gang leader that Hogan was.
Right. But yeah, like, Sting and Davis, the main heels on WCW, are beating up this babyface fucking group, or this group that they're trying to push with babyfaces. And the fans are just like, do it, do it. Because they're actually coming to the aid of Chris Benoit. They're handcuffing, releasing Benoit from the handcuffs in the cage.
Look how much it makes sense. How many stars would you give this, Stevie?
I'm probably going to give it a 7.
Doug?
Five.
Eric?
I gave it a 3.
I'd go like a 4. This was not the best match on the card. It was an okay gimmick match. Doug, is this the best World War III match?
No.
Which one's the best?
Probably 90. It's a toss between 96 and 98.
Do you like the Nash one?
I think
not. Okay. I like 97.
97 was better.
97 was too convoluted with, you know, Hogan coming out and all that. I mean, I did like that one too, that was actually the first time though where like the rules like really changed.
Yeah.
Like, you could throw him under the rope and he'd be eliminated. Like, it wasn't over the top rope. It was 96 or 98 were kind of cool.
Yeah. 98 just sucks because we know what it led up to.
Yeah, payoff wasn't great. The match was the World War III match was fine, but there wasn't a lot of because no Hogan, no Sting, no Savage. Goldberg couldn't be in it because he was the champion.
So Nash just kind of had to win it.
Right. Well, who else? I mean, and Paige and Bret Hart weren't even in it because they went on last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're towards the end here. Let's give this show a rating. WCW World War III 1995. How many stars are you giving this, Eric? The whole show.
I give it a 7.
Okay, Stevie?
To be perfectly honest, I have to give it a 6.
Dougie?
Okay. The worst part about it was the end. Now, leading up to it, good TV title match. Tape fist match was a hell of a lot better than it should have been. The women's match was decent. U.S. title match was pretty good. Luger Savage build up was better. Flair Sting was awesome. This was man. If I had to give it a rating, it would probably have to be a 7.
I would give it a 7 as well. I thought this is a not a mediocre pay per view, but not a great one either. So I think it's a 7 is a good rating. So yeah, that was our 95-3. Oh, what's up, Aaron?
I think the ending ruined the pay per view in a way, but not totally. Because if it wasn't for the ending, I would have probably given 8.
Yeah, it put a sour taste in people's mouths, I think.
Oh, definitely. And here's the thing.
Yeah, you mean 25 million years later.
Pay per view of that year, though.
Yeah.
You know, WWE 95, they weren't necessarily great as far as pay per views go.
Yeah.
96 obviously would get better. But it's probably the more entertaining pay-per-view of that year. I mean, not necessarily a great... I mean, here's the thing. Back in September at the War Game, at the Fall Brawl pay-per-view, the ending was the Giant snapping Hulk Hogan's neck. Halloween Havoc 95 in October, the ending was the Yeti butt-fucking Hulk Hogan. Here... you know, this pay-per-view, the ending was Hulk Hogan bitching like some trailer park hose bag that fucking, you know, just had her man stolen from her. He's bitching because he got thrown over the top. And he's acting like he got sodomized with a rusty fucking fishing knife. Jesus Christ. Because he's a whiny... He's a whiny piece of shit that feels like he needs to be at the center of attention of everything. And he basically, I know, like, he gave wrestling the big boom period and all that. I also want to say that he's also the downfall of wrestling as well.
And all right, guys, if you want to tune in next week for our Hulk Hogan appreciation episode, make sure to be going to be doing and donations. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I agree. He is the downfall. His selfishness has ruined a lot of careers. But
yeah.
Does anyone else have any final things to say about this pay-per-view before we go home?
If
it happened today, it would probably be the biggest controversy in wrestling history.
They could. I don't think they could do it today. They don't have the. I don't think Vince would probably. W probably would.
Yeah, I mean, both have the roster to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Why not? I just think it's a stupid concept, though. Do it better, you know. Like it's cool on paper, but it's too much. You need to be able to see it. 60 men's too much. More people, like I've told you, more people isn't the best. It makes for the best content.
That's, quantity isn't as important as quality.
No, it's not. And I know that a lot of these guys think bigger is better, but the reason some of the greatest wrestling matches of all time are one-on-one contests.
Yes.
Sometimes it's all you need.
Right.
That's what wrestling is.
Less is more.
But for this, it was okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else have anything, or are we going to take it home?
Yeah, we can take it home.
All right, guys.
Good show, guys.
Doug, thank you all for joining, and we will see you next week.
And we'll let everybody know what the poll is going to be. We'll probably post it up. Probably not just SmackDown tonight, because I'll probably be drifting off.
Number. Yeah, probably tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys.
See you soon.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.